Hello, welcome back to the Humans of ID podcast, but this time with a twist. This is a Careers and Professional Development edition hosted by the Department of International Development of the London School of Economics and Political Science, organized by the Careers and Professionals ID student organizers. My name is Valentina Papou, and I'm here at the Palladium offices with our Chief Operation Officer for Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, and LSE alumni, Amelia Prestage, to talk about her experience working across different levels within the development sector, and in particular, in the world of development consultancy. Hello, Amelia, how are you?
Hi, yeah, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. We're thrilled to be here with you to talk about the prospects and challenges involved when entering and working in the development sector, particularly now in a moment in which many of us are deciding which path to follow after our studies and might be a little bit lost with so many different options around. So without further ado, could you share a bit about your journey into the development sector, mainly what drew you initially to this line of work?
Sure, absolutely. So I initially started working in the private sector of kind of accountancy and audit before and then during my undergraduate degree, which was in history. That wasn't for me, but did give me a lot of really useful skills that I've then drawn on, and we can come back to that later. And then I went to LSE, where you all are, and did my master's, which I absolutely loved, and then moved into the world of work. So I did a short stint out in Laos with Save the Children, and then in their head offices again in London. I then moved over to a smaller NGO that was focused in the health sector, and I primarily worked in East Africa. And then I did that for a couple of years before I started at Palladium. So I've been at Palladium now nearly 10 years. I joined as a project manager, and have sort of worked my way up, senior project manager, project director, and now I am the COO, as you said at the beginning. So that means that I oversee all of the operations and our operating platform within the region, which is a job that I started in November and I already love.
That's super interesting. It's amazing how you mix a little bit of field work with private sector experience. Do you think that the diversity in those different experiences molded as well your career path?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've enjoyed working between. I didn't really know much about Palladium when I first applied for the role. I had another friend actually who was working here in a different department who told me that they were hiring. And when I spoke to the hiring manager who was kind of on the road, I remember in Tanzania trying to talk to me and trying to interview me over the phone. I think I was in Nairobi and we had a very bad line. But it just sounded like a really cool opportunity and a really interesting company. And it's Palladium has grown so much and changed quite a lot since I've been here. And it's just a really, really diverse and interesting place to work. I know we'll come on in a bit to kind of talk about the development consultancy sector and what that looks like. So we can talk a bit more about that then. But I think what drew me to working in development in general, I think is the same for many of us. In the sector, which is just about making a genuine difference to people facing the worst challenges on our planet. And I know it kind of sounds a bit trite, doesn't it, when people say it, but I think what that means in this sector, and definitely at Palladium I can speak for, is you just have a community of really highly motivated co-workers, which makes all the difference in your sort of day-to-day work.
I can totally relate with what you're saying. Before LSE, I was working at the grassroots level with NGOs in Argentina and as a consultant at the Inter-American Development Bank. And even though I was engaging with people with very different backgrounds and expertise, in both worlds, I had the beautiful consistency of working with driven individuals just wanting to democratize opportunities for others. Having said that, I was wondering if you could expand a little bit more in your experience what working as a development consultant entail, and what would you say are the main skills required to enter this career path?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I spoke at an event about this similar topic a few weeks ago, and it did become clear that it was not clear to a lot of the students there what this part of the sector was and how it operated. And I think one of the reasons is there is quite a lot of variety in organisations working in this part of the sector, which I think I'd probably more broadly describe as private sector international development, because I think consultancy can be a bit of a misnomer in some cases. So Palladium is one of a kind of group of companies, let's say, that bids for and delivers large-scale programs for primarily government donors. So there are other companies like DAI, Tetratech, ASI that fall into that sort of same broad category. I think what's great about Palladium, one of the things I love, is it's not really just that, and I'm kind of using quotes, because we sort of broadly describe ourselves as a global impact firm, and there's so much variety within our organization. So we have an asset management arm that does, you know, impact investing, mobilizing private sector capital. We have nature-based solutions teams working here and overseas. We even have a team in the UK doing employability work, working also directly with refugees in the UK. So there's a huge diversity within just this one company, which is one of the things I love. And I think I felt very lucky firsthand to experience some of that. So working across some of those different sectors, which has shaped how I look at my current role and the kind of the things that I'm doing at the moment.
That's super interesting. And I'm wondering, do you think that there's some common misconceptions about what it is to work in the development consultancy?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking about this. I think maybe one misconception, I don't think this is really development consultancy, but maybe it's just development in general, that I've seen probably over the last 10, 15 years, is there used to be, it's much less now, but kind of adventurers, development tourists, yeah, that you would encounter. And I don't think there's a place for that anymore. And I would really discourage anyone who has that kind of outlook to not be joining the sector. That's kind of the thing that I thought of. And sorry, I didn't answer your question about the skills that we look for.
Yeah.
So I guess I can speak for us personally. So I think what we offer at kind of a head office, let's say, level, is kind of a rounded career path. So it centres on project management and then developing or honing technical skills across a variety of sectors. So we have teams operating in health, education, economic growth, climate, environment, natural resources, and our staff work across those areas.
And I can imagine that depending on the area, there are different skills that you have to have as well, but probably a lot of like quantitative or qualitative research skills are super valuable in this regard as well.
Yeah, I think that research is a part of it. Project management is a part of it, which can, I think, sometimes feel a bit elusive when you just say it like that. But financial skills, practical skills in, you know, like planning out and tracking projects. I don't mean you necessarily have to have a project management certification or something like that, but certainly being organized, being commercially savvy, being out there, interacting with teams and clients, having that level of kind of interpersonal skills and understanding is really important.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I'm wondering, before Palladium, you were also involved with some charities and different projects like Save the Children, the FCDO Impact Program and Health Poverty Action. And I was wondering, as someone that worked in various roles within the development sector, what would you say are the main differences between working in NGOs and in development consultancy?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think they're all that different. I think NGOs can sometimes be more mission-driven in that, by that I mean they'll have, say, a certain mission that they focus on and they'll coalesce funding around that. Whereas, as I alluded to previously, in the private sector, we bid for certain contracts and then delivers those. So the dynamic of that is slightly different. But I think more and more those lines can blur. So I guess I wouldn't put organisations into certain boxes necessarily. And I do think if you're thinking about the careers aspect and the job functions, they're broadly the same across those organisations. So, for example, I was a program officer at an NGO, and then I became a program manager at Palladium. So those skills and what I was doing was broadly similar, whether I was reporting on a grant to the EU or a commercial contract with FCDO. And they all have this, you know, similar enabling functions, HR, finance, safety and security, monitoring and evaluation. There's a lot of broad similarities, I think.
And do you think that from Palladium, do you work as well with NGOs, or is okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do often work with NGOs in our supply chains.
So above all, to receive information probably about ground issues, right?
Yeah, often there are, if you're working in a certain area and there are grassroots organisations, community-led organisations that you'll be engaging with on the ground, absolutely. And we'll also work with the large multinational NGOs if that's the kind of the right fit for what that situation requires.
That makes sense. And I'm going to get it a bit more personal now. Okay. And I'm going to ask you, what have been some of the most rewarding aspects of your career so far? And if you could share with us a particular memorable experience or project from your career that had a significant...
Absolutely. So I think undoubtedly the most rewarding aspect of my career are the teams that I've worked with. I think it's so rewarding to work with amazing teams on the ground. And I think my job has been and should be kind of being in the background and those teams being in the foreground. And you kind of all work hard and dig deep together to achieve what you want to achieve. Related to that, I think field visits are always really, really rewarding and they reinforce the impact. And as well as understanding the importance of the work and the context in which your team are operating, they can be very meaningful personally, I think. At a general level, I really thrive on solving problems and helping other people solve problems. And I think that's why I've landed in the sort of career trajectory that I have, because that's kind of how my day-to-day is now. In terms of a project, this is a really hard one. I think there's a project called Eshe that we ran in Kenya that I saw nearly end to end. And that always feels quite special when you see something all the way from when it starts to closing down, because you see the full impact and it kind of realizing what it was set out to do. So the project was basically a private sector family planning project in Kenya, which was completely new to me at the time. I'd done a lot on health in my degree at LSE, but hadn't really had the chance to put that in knowledge and skills kind of practically beyond the work that I'd been doing in the public sector health space with Health Poverty Action. So private sector was new and was very exciting. So I spent a lot of time with the team in Kenya learning and supporting them. The project aimed to strengthen and increase the private sector for family planning in Kenya. And it was doing things like establishing kiosks that were selling family planning products, brokering deals with pharmaceutical companies to bring new products in, as well as kind of working with the government of Kenya to help strengthen this area. And I think there were so many things about it that I loved, but going out and seeing the kiosks, meeting the people who are running them was just so interesting. And I really felt like I learned a lot. And we formed, as a project team, a really high trust team over the period. And that just makes it kind of a joy to work with because you all really, trust each other and enjoy the dynamic of working together. So I think that's probably, it's hard to choose because there are so many amazing things that I feel I've been lucky to work on, but probably that one.
No, and also like having the experience when you know people by name and surname, the degree of commitment that you have is different as well to the people that you're impacting as well in your project. So I can imagine that has also shaped a lot your experience. And you mentioned that you started in this project in particular, it was a topic that you didn't know so much. So how do you start out when you don't know something so much about a topic or a theme? And what is your strategy to get more involved?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think it's something that we do more and more now because I think there's importance in working across sectors and learning about intersectionality as well. So if you're working on an economic growth program, it's likely to have a climate angle. So you're going to have to go out and understand that. I think always the way I approach things is, I guess, be humble. If you don't know something, that's okay. You don't have to be the cleverest person in the room. If you're going to go out and kind of try and find out all you can about it, learn from the amazing staff that there are there on the ground, and be clear on what your role is and what you're bringing to the table. I didn't join that program as an expert in family planning. I was there to help on the program management side, which I did know how to do. So as well as me learning along the way about vibrant sector family planning, I was helping to ensure and bringing my skills to ensure that the program ran smoothly. So I felt I was, yeah, quite clear about what I was bringing and what I could contribute and where my accountabilities were, but also then drawing on the expertise around me to learn and understand more about the wider context.
Yeah, I believe that humility is super important in this context as well. And you mentioned that you brought as well your expertise in project management and that you like a lot solving problems. Do you have like a particular framework or certain steps that you like take on when you're encountering a new challenge?
Oh, that's a really good question. I feel like it totally depends what it is.
Exactly, of course. Yeah.
I think I, and my colleagues would probably say this, I tend to run head on at stuff. So I'll always, if I see a problem, I see a place where I can help, then I will just dive in and try and make myself useful. But I think it kind of comes back to what we were saying before. The most important thing is working with the teams on the ground and understanding kind of the true nature of the issue. So not me turning up and saying, oh, yeah, I've got a problem. Okay, I can just fix that. I know exactly what you're talking about, without even really listening. It's about really understanding what it is and then working out within the parameters that I understand to exist within, you know, the legal framework, the organisation, the people we have available, the budget, what we can then do.
That makes sense. And I think that you have so much experience with project management and with different other sectors within as well, the development world. But I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about your challenges when you first started out. What were your things that were more challenging for you?
Yeah, I think, so I left LSE in 2011.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And at the time, I think my group of friends, when we graduated, were having many of the same feelings that I think some of the students I spoke to at LSE a few weeks ago were having. We really weren't sure how to bridge that gap between having a degree in international development and getting a job and what that really meant. And I think at that time, there was this real underlying thought, fear, anxiety maybe, that you had to get out in the field straight away, that the organizations were expecting you to have that experience on your CV. And that opportunity isn't available to everyone. You know, there was a lot, when I started out, there was a lot of unpaid internships. You know, there were a lot of opportunities where it was sort of very minimal salary or pay, and I think those are much less these days, which is great because we're helping to build a more inclusive sector, but that is very challenging and wasn't very, you know, not very inclusive at the time. So I think a lot of us dispersed very quickly and went out to try and do field opportunities. My husband was on the same degree program. We weren't married then. And he, yeah, went out to Sierra Leone for 3 years. I had friends that went to Asia, to East Africa. And I think that was what we really felt we needed to get that kind of foot in the door in the sector. But it was really interesting for me as I was starting to look for kind of the next job and the next job, that the most interesting thing on my CV to people I spoke to was my experience in accountancy. Because I thought that's probably the thing I would have thought last that they'd be interested in before, you know, degree, experience overseas, all of those things. But they were. And I think it opened really interesting doors for me. I was sent out to work in our Ethiopia office to help our partner organizations set up financial management frameworks and be able to set processes and controls in place so that we could disperse more funding to them. And that, you know, opened a door to working with a wider space of organizations. And it just kind of, that was like the little key that I personally realized I had to be able to kind of get that job and move on to the next one. And that's quite specific, and not everyone has that, obviously. But I think it helped me overcome that challenge of how to get the next job or what that might look like. And I was a bit worried that it was going to put me into a certain box, that I might end up somehow being I don't know, a sort of accountant in international development. And I knew that overall, that field wasn't for me, the sort of accountancy field. Obviously nothing against accountants at all. But it didn't. It just opened a door to a more generalised, broader set of opportunities, I think, and people valued those skills. So I always say to people, particularly if their career changes and they're coming from a non-development field, that don't undersell your prior experience. Because even though you might think, oh, I'm leaving that behind, I don't want to do that, I want to do this now. Actually, there might be so many transferable aspects of those skills and competencies that you can bring to the table in an interview. And often in an interview now, organisations ask what we call competency-based questions, which are very situational-based. So tell us about a time when XXX happened, and it will be to explore things like your communication skills or your problem solving skills, your conflict resolution skills, etc. So you won't necessarily need to sit there and talk about, I don't know, your volunteer experience overseas, but you'll talk about a specific situation that demonstrates that you are a capable communicator or you understand how to break down and solve a problem. So I think you can draw those competencies and skills from so many places in your life that don't necessarily have to be
job related. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think it's better, and I hope that it's, you know, can make the sector more inclusive.
I think that is very interesting and encouraging as well, because all of us come with different toolboxes from where we lived or from where we learned, like in our family context, in our as well in your work environment. And I think that is truly encouraging. Thank you. And looking ahead, what do you envision for the future of the development sector, and how do you think professionals can best prepare for upcoming challenges and opportunities?
Yeah, I think this is a really good question. I think the sector needs us to be agile. I think it's good not to be dogmatic. And I don't mean by that you can't specialise in a certain area, but I think more and more we'll need to work across sectors, and knowing when to work across sectors. I think we need to be reflective of the power dynamics of the sector and align career aspirations with upholding the interests of the communities we serve, and just kind of continuing to be reflective about that. And I think we need to be resilient to pivot and adapt. I think our industry is moving to a place where the problems are bigger, the solutions need to move faster. And so that means being brave, trialing something, and then either seeing that it doesn't work and stopping, or seeing that it does work and scaling, but that loop being faster. We see a lot of programs like that at the moment that we run, that kind of that trial approach. And sometimes I think that the challenge of that can feel quite daunting, to just kind of to try, you know, to just crack on and try, move beyond the theory, I guess, of studying to getting out there. But I think 80% good is better than 100% perfect. And that's a cool opportunity. I'm not sure, it's probably a challenge as well, but I think it's an opportunity. And I think, I guess my final thought would be, we'll still need to be political with a small P and a big P probably, because developmental change is inherently political. And particularly obviously in, as I was saying at the beginning, in this part of the sector where we work, understanding and how to speak to those different dynamics and incentives will always be important. So I think those are probably the main areas of my advice. I think on a personal level, I would also say, and I said this to a number of people who approached me at the event at LSE a few weeks ago, I would encourage people not to be worried about being able to have a family and work in this industry. A few women at that event came up and kind of expressed concerns around that and asked kind of how I had managed it, because I think at some point said that I have two children. And I think it is possible. And I think I would encourage people not to be put off. I'm a COO and have grown to that level within this company. In that time, I've had two children. I also work 4 days a week to balance that with my caring responsibilities for my children. And I think it is still possible to have that balance. Sometimes people look in at this industry from the outside, I think, and worry that it's not possible, that it's the day-to-day is all too consuming and that you can't, you know, with the travel and all of those things. But I would definitely encourage people to put that worry aside.
Honestly, thank you. What you're saying is truly comforting. Not only these final words, but I believe our entire conversation has been very encouraging. Thank you for your humanity and relatability and for being our guest today in the Humans of ID podcast, organized by the Department of International Development and hosted by the LSE ID Career Student Organizers. Thanks to you, today we had the opportunity to explore some of the aspects of not only the world of development consultancy, but of the international development sector more broadly too. And we truly thank you for your humanity and relatability. It's been both comforting and encouraging. I would also like to give a special thanks to all our listeners, the Department of International Development, Maya Bullen and Andrea Merino Mayayo, all of the IDs, student organizers behind this project, including Rasana Wad, our script co-editor and social media creator, Michaela Levitt, our podcast editor and producer, and Shivani, our transcript editor and podcast manager. Please make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or your preferred platform, and follow us at the LSE Department of International Development on Instagram and LinkedIn. Send us any comments, suggestions, questions, and thoughts on what you'd like to hear on the International Development link in bio, because we truly want to hear from you. Stay tuned for more guests as we continue exploring further insights on how to start out in the development sector. Until next time.